If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to Dragon Quest FM, where we talk about and obsess over Dragon Quest. I'm Austin.
I'm Ragnar.
And me and Ragnar are doing a deep dive into Dragon Quest IV. This week, it's the first episode in our deep dive series on Dragon Quest IV. We did this a while back for Dragon Quest IX, did quite a few episodes on it. We're doing the same thing for Dragon Quest IV. And so this first week, we're kind of talking about like the history of DQ4, a little bit about the hero's world, kind of things like that, but really just how the game impacted the series overall, some kind of history fun facts about Dragon Quest IV. And that's really because we'll probably be referencing this stuff a lot in the next deep dive episodes we do
right
in the upcoming weeks. So is that lazy of us? Maybe. Is it efficient? We'll see. Because BJ is going to forget everything anyway.
True. It is. That's 100p. You got me.
You're not going to remember any of this tomorrow.
I won't. I got to take a supplement for memory or something. It's gone.
Yeah. So quick news though, before we get too far into today's episode, we got an announcement yesterday, just a few days ago from when we're recording this, we get a hero amiibo finally in the fall.
I'm really excited about this. I'm excited that we finally get a hero. I'm excited that we finally get a hero amiibo, and I'm finally excited that we get an affordable hero figurine.
It's like the most affordable DQ merch for Westerners, like maybe ever.
Like, I'm super excited about that. Like, outside of the ridiculous secondary market that happens for some amiibos, I'm really excited to be able to, you know, walk into Walmart and grab a Dragon Quest toy for like, you know, $13 or something, whatever they are. And then I'm also excited about the Persona 5 one, too, that they announced that there's going to be a Joker amiibo. And I love Persona 5, and I don't really have any merch other than Persona Q2's Collector's Edition. And so I'm excited to actually have the Joker figurine standing up too, because they both look really well sculpted, even though I've heard people complain about the Luminary one. I mean, it's no Bring Arts figure, but I think it looks pretty good myself.
It looks good. There is something like the paint job, and I mean, it's just a prototype that they shared, but the paint job for the Luminary, his face or something looks a little jank. Like there's something there was something with it. I noticed it, but I didn't worry too much, because I'm just like, whatever, it's a prototype for an amiibo figure. And overall, I feel like amiibo figures have always been high quality.
And I'm excited to see what they do with the final version, if they're going to do any kind of additional amiibo too. Since you can play as the different heroes, I'm hoping that you can get the different amiibo for them as well over time.
Yeah, I am too. Especially, I would love the hero from 4. Since we're talking about 4 today, I would really love the hero from 4, because, you know, there is already a Bring Arts figure of the Luminary that you can get on sale for $60 fairly often. I mean, I know that's still way more expensive than like 12 or 13 bucks, but it's at least kind of available. The action figures for 8, the Play Arts figures for 8, you know, are still fairly inexpensive on eBay, or they were the last time I checked. And, you know, Erdrick has his own, the hero from 3 has his own Bring Arts figure and all kinds of merch already.
Right.
So really, I just want the hero from 4, because it's a little bit harder to come by that a figure of the hero from 4. So that's one that I'd be most excited for.
I think there's a Bring Arts figure for him that I saw on Amazon Japan that was about 66,000 yen. So, or 6,600 yen.
And for the hero from 4?
For the hero from 4. I'm actually looking for it right now as I scroll through.
I knew the hero from 5 got one, but I did not know that the, and I know Elena has one, but I haven't seen one of the hero, a Bring Arts figure of the hero, even like advertised as something that's coming out soon.
Well, let me say this. It was a figure of him that looked like the Bring Arts figure for 5. And so I am looking for it now to send you the link of it because it looked really, really cool. And seeing the stuff for the hero for 4, like, you know, to both segue and to talk about the cool figures, it makes me sad that I chose the woman to play as during 4. That I really, really like the male hero more than the female figure, like model that they use. And so playing through 4 made me sad because I really disliked the sprite that they used for her. Like, I really, really like a lot of the fan art that I see, which is why I chose her. And then playing through the game, I was kind of saddened by just how much I disliked the way that the sprite moved around. And
I gotcha. But
yeah, I see this stuff with 4, and I think he's like, everyone calls him Solo from this one. And I just haven't, I wish I'd chose him because he looks really, really, really cool.
Solo and the woman is Sophia. It's because they're like
Sophia,
the default.
Okay.
They're the default names, I guess, if you don't want to name your character anything, if you want to go with a default name.
Oh, really?
I don't think Solo I even... and Sophia.
Okay.
I guess. I mean, I never use those kind of names anyway because it's like the official DQ4 manga, he's called something else. And like in other things, he's called other things. And it's just like, it's too hard to keep up with. So I'll just call him the hero.
And now I'm looking for the Dragon Quest figure here, and I can't find the one for 4 that I saw yesterday.
Probably just talking about, they have, they call them like, they're called like Dragon Quest Soft Vinyl.
Maybe so, because he was wearing the Zenithian armor and he looked really, really awesome.
Yeah, there's one of him just normal. They have heroes for a lot of the previous games.
Right.
They're just listed as soft vinyl figures that, yeah, are like $60-$75 that are older ones.
Okay.
That they did basically before like the Play Arts or Bring Arts figures came out in the 2000s.
I got you.
Yeah.
It looks so much like the Erdrick ones and the Bring Arts that I'd seen that I actually just kind of assumed it was a Bring Arts one. But if I come across it, I'll send it to you.
I know what you're talking about with the hero from 4 dressed up in all the Zenithian armor with the Zenithian sword. Yeah, I've seen it before.
Okay.
It's a little bit out of my price range, so I've never bought it.
Yeah, that's how I feel about the Dai figure that I found on there. It's 5,800 yen, and I don't really want to pay that, but I really, really like Dai after reading the anime, or reading the manga, and I just keep looking at it and being like, but I want it.
Yeah, I gotcha. So we have a lot of good Dragon Quest 4 stuff to get into. Before we really dive into that DQ4 conversation, though, we do have some new patrons again this week. We have Lord Roto and Ryan Molina that we both want to give real nice thank yous to. So first up, Lord Roto, here's a real nice thank you from BJ.
Lord Roto! I am so excited that the hero of legend has decided to grace us with his patronage. Thank you, Lord Roto. And thank you for being Roto rather than Lodo. Appreciate it.
So thank you, Lord Roto. And then the other one is from Ryan Molina.
Thanks, Ryan.
Oh, what?
Thank you, Ryan. You are fantastic. I love your channels, and you are a fantastic human being who has given me lots and lots of resources for lots of different things. So you're a fantastic person. Thank you.
Yeah. So really quickly, Ryan, thank you. But I did want to use this to illustrate a point that I've often talked about. I'm trying not to climb up on a high horse here or anything. But, you know, I always talk about how Dragon Quest fans, we look out for each other, right?
Right.
Okay. So... and I believe it was last week's episode, we told people to go check out Ryan's website and talked about Ryan quite a bit because we were talking about Dragon Quest X, right?
Right.
He was not a patron yet. He became a patron, though, after we had that discussion, but before the episode was live on Friday.
Yep.
And he heard it. So, like, we reciprocated love without knowing that the other person had done that already.
It's true. It's why this has probably, well, it has become and probably is the most positive fandom that I've ever been a part of. And like, it's one of the most positive fandoms I know of in general, just in terms of being nice to each other and being accepting and welcoming. And I know we've said that before, but it's like, y'all, for real, we do have each other's backs. And it's crazy how, like, I know there were a couple of weeks where I wasn't available, like that I was like, I think it was when I was out of the country last year actually, and there were some like bad storms in my area at another time, and I got messages on Discord being like, hey dude, you okay? And check in is like, hey, has anybody heard from BJ? I know there were storms there. And it was like, that's crazy to me where it came from, members of the DQ community. So it's it makes me really, really happy because of that. So y'all are fantastic human beings, all of you.
Yeah. So I just wanted to use that to kind of illustrate my point. But also, thank you so much, Lord Roto and Ryan. We really appreciate both you guys joining our little Patreon community, helping to support this podcast. And it's thanks true. To all of our patrons. Let's talk about some Dragon Quest IV.
Yay, I finished it.
So BJ finished it. It is almost a year to the day that you started Dragon Quest IV.
Did you look it up?
We did an episode, yeah, because I knew it was right around here whenever you had started 4 and I was fighting Nocturnus, the super boss, at the end of 6. Mm. And so we did just kind of like a catch-up hour where we were talking about where we were in our different playthroughs of those games we were playing. And yeah, it's almost a year to the day that you were talking about starting up Dragon Quest IV, and I think you were in the Elena and Kirill and Boria chapter,
yep.
Chapter 2 at the time. And yeah, so here we are almost a year later and you beat it. But congratulations on beating Dragon Quest IV.
Woohoo! It was you pushing me to do that that actually got me through it, to really power through the opening chapters, because I still hold that. Okay, so let me preface this by saying that my view on this game is probably skewed by the fact that I spread out the chapters so much and that I had to play through just on different platforms the first two chapters a lot more than I did the others. And so it felt really, really draggy to me from doing it on mobile as well. So instead of being Dragon Quest, it was Draggy Quest.
Oh my gosh.
That was a good one. And I tickled myself. But it's probably my least favorite of the Dragon Quest games I've played through and played. And I know that that's going to get me some crap from people. And it's probably skewed like that. But I feel like this is probably the weakest of all of them, especially given that it's a remake. I think that's what skewed it for me. As much as I liked the last couple of chapters and liked them a lot, I think that the buildup and just some of the mechanics, they didn't remake enough for the DS mm-hmm. before they, rather than having it just being a port. It feels more like a port than a remake, despite the obvious graphic and gameplay updates.
Yeah, and we are going to talk about the remake differences in today's episode, actually. And I should mention that Dragon Quest IV is my second favorite Dragon Quest game after Dragon Quest XI. So it's my second favorite game. It is your least favorite of the ones you've played so far. So hopefully we'll kind of even each other out.
Yeah, and that means very little in terms of Dragon Quest games. I don't remember if it was on here that we talked about it or if it was somewhere else, or maybe it was your episode of Slime Time that you talked about it and I was talking back to you guys, but talking about how Dragon Quest game, saying it's the worst Dragon Quest game or the least favorite, is still like saying it's still very, very good, because there aren't really any stinkers.
Yeah, I think Matt and I were talking about that on Slime Time last week.
Okay, that's what it was, because I was talking back to you while I was listening to it. I was like, yeah, they're not here, man.
Yeah. Let's just jump ahead to our community spotlight segment really fast and say that I'm on Slime Time. Last week's Slime Time. Our episode was pre-recorded last week, so we didn't get to promote that. But be sure to check me out on Slime Time. It's the other Dragon Quest podcast. We talk about it quite a lot on here. I kind of just assume people who listen to our podcast also listen to that one. So, yeah, they have 2 new episodes up. One of them was with me, and Liam was not there because he had a new baby daughter. So congrats to Liam for the new baby.
We're very
that's pretty awesome. Yeah, a new Dragon Quest fan in the world. Can't get much newer than that, like a week old.
Yeah.
So Platy and I sat down and talked about Dragon Quest, Dragon Quest X, a whole lot. So be sure to check out Slime Time, and big congrats to Liam on baby number 2.
Oh, it's number 2. I somehow completely forgot he had an older child, even though he plays Dragon Quest with them all the time. Until you said that, like, it clicked. For some reason, I was thinking that this was the birth of his first child, even though I know he sits around and plays Dragon Quest with the others. So, yes, congratulations. Yeah.
He has a son that is a little bit younger than Naomi.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah. All right. So, Dragon Quest IV, some, like, quick facts for you right here. It did come out in 1990, which was a very long time ago. That's, like, 30 years ago.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, and it only made it over here in 1992. There's a 2-year delay. And when it came over here, it was Dragon Warrior 4. It was not the last Dragon Warrior game. That was Dragon Warrior 7. But there was a huge gap in time between Dragon Warrior 4 and Dragon Warrior 7 coming out. So in a lot of ways, if you like collect the NES Dragon Warrior games, like 4 kind of ends it there. Because, you know, you have like Dragon Warrior 1, 2, 3, 4, and then there's like, what, a decade, 12 years of video games, and then you have a PS1 disc with Dragon Warrior 7 on it. So,
yep. And and the original one was on the Famicom still, that it was ported later to what, the PS1, but it didn't even get a Super Famicom version, did it? It was just Famicom and NES.
Yeah, it was Famicom. It did not get Super Famicom. 1, 2, 3, and 5 Super Famicom, and 6, of course. But yeah, 4, they just skipped 4. There was a remake for PS1. It wasn't just a port. It was a remake for PS1. Came out 2001 in Japan. And Enix actually promoted it over here. I'm going to link to this in our show notes so people can see it. Because there's actually some scans of the Dragon Warrior 7 manual that you can find over on the Dragon's Den over at Wudis.com. And so I'm going to link to that here in case people want to check it out, because I like looking at manuals and stuff anyway for funsies. And they promoted it as coming to the West. I mean, you can see it. It's in the very back. You know how PS1 games always had ads, like the back page had an ad for an upcoming game. And yeah, this one is like coming 2002, Dragon Warrior 4. And, you know, it tells you to go to enix.com for the latest info, has some screenshots, and tells you that the rating is pending. You remember when video games used to be RP? I feel like that never happens anymore.
Yeah, I don't, they're always rated very, very quickly, actually.
Yeah.
But way this before one had, the game comes out, yeah.
This one had RP. And anyway, so you can see that. So they totally advertised it and then just never did it. It never came over here. Part of that, I think, is because Heartbeat, the studio that made several Dragon Quest games, they made DQ6 and 7. You're playing Dragon Quest 7 right now on 3DS.
Yep, I am.
And even though they closed down years ago, when you boot up 7 on the 3DS, you still see the Heartbeat logo.
I have not paid attention to that.
Yeah.
Like, I like for real, because I basically keep 3DS games up suspended in the background, and I don't remember how long it's been since I even saw the credits that roll through the beginning of it. But that's
I'll say like Heartbeat Studio or something like that, because they did make 7, but they closed down before the remake ever made it over here in the West, and so they claimed because of production costs and translation costs and stuff like that, it just wasn't worth it. So Heartbeat left, and I actually did, when I was doing those daily quarantine cast minisodes on our Patreon page, I actually did a little minisode about this, because the guy from Heartbeat, his name is Manabu Yamana. He was one of the big guys at Heartbeat, and he went on to found the company Genius Sonority and make Pokemon spinoffs for Nintendo. So I did a minisode all about that you can check out on our Patreon page. But my thinking behind that, I don't think I said this in the minisode, but just kind of, I've never read anything saying this is what it is, but in my mind at least, I think maybe Heartbeat just closed down because they saw bigger money with Pokemon. You know, there was a really big gap for 7 to release, and they worked on the remake for 4. But then you had Pokemon, which this would have been in the very, very early 2000s, which was like this hot new property.
Right.
And this IP was already making a ton of money. I think still Pokemon is the highest grossing video game IP in history, right?
I think so. Like the last time I saw.
So maybe they made the right decision by closing down Heartbeat and not making Dragon Quest games and moving over to Pokemon spinoffs.
I mean, that Pokemon money, I would like to have a slice. I would like to have a slice of that Pokemon money.
So, yeah, they did. One of the games that I was most familiar with them before, you know, all of this was, do you remember the Pokemon Coliseum games for GameCube?
Yep, I do. I played the first one because I was like, sweet, Pokemon on the console on TV. And that was roughly all I ever did with it. I rented it once, I think.
I got you. One of my brother's friends had a GameCube, and he lived fairly close to us, close enough that like my parents had to drive us there. We couldn't like walk there or anything, but like it was a short drive. You know, it was like a 5-minute drive.
Gotcha.
And anyway, he had a GameCube, and he had that game, and I remember playing that quite a bit as kids when we would go over to their house, because I would go over there sometimes too. He had some older brothers and stuff that I would hang out with a lot while my brother and him were hanging out together. And we were all pretty close in age, like within 2 or 3 years from the oldest to the youngest. So, you know, we could all enjoy video games together.
that's always good to have those groups. Like I had a couple like that where we were all just right there and we'd be able to sit and play video games and share them. Like, man, those were the days.
Yeah, I thought it was worth mentioning that Yamana, he did return to Dragon Quest for a little while for DQ Swords, which you and I played about a year ago, too. So they made that for Nintendo for the Wii, but it was a Dragon Quest game. So they didn't just flat out stop making Dragon Quest games. They at least came back, and that wouldn't have been his Heartbeat anymore. That would have been under Genius Sonority.
Right.
But they did make Dragon Quest Swords. So there's some fun facts about Heartbeat, for you. But also just, you know, some kind of, I thought, interesting background info for Dragon Quest IV. The next thing that we kind of wanted to talk about is Yuji Horii. So I know I refer to this interview like a lot, but it's so good. You know, the interviews that's at the back of that DQ11 art book.
Right.
It's like so interesting, so good. And I think this one is in there. I'm like 90% sure this is where it is. But they're talking about where did they like run into a problem with the series or anything like that. And Yuji Horii says in that interview that Dragon Quest IV was really a turning point for him and for the series, because after they made Dragon Quest III, he was kind of like, man, am I done? Like, this wraps up the whole, like, Erdrick Rodo trilogy, and, you know, where do you go from here? And also, he kind of thought he'd run out of ideas, because, I mean, it's like, you know, you do finish this really big trilogy that's immensely popular, and then it's like, what do you do from that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there is a very good chance of falling off and making a Hobbit trilogy rather than Lord of the Rings.
There is. Peter Jackson never wanted to make the Hobbit.
He didn't want to make them. Yeah, it was basically...
And it's very obvious from those movies that he did not really want to make them.
Yep, it very much is. I'm glad they exist in theory. And like, I'm glad that DQ4, like when he got the inspiration for what the game was, that it really, you know, it didn't only change the way that the DQ series went, that I feel like the way that this was structured and just how advanced it was for the NES really kind of paved the way for a lot of the Squaresoft RPGs on Super Nintendo as well.
Yeah, because if you should look on YouTube if you haven't seen this before, the NES final battle with Sorrow is like incredible that's on the NES.
Yeah, it is. Like, it is. Sorrow is he's a monstrosity no matter what, but on the NES, it's not something you would expect on the NES.
Yeah, with the animations with him transforming and stuff, mm-hmm. It's just like, it's amazing. I mean, it's not amazing if you compare it to like a PS4 game, but it's amazing if you consider that it was an NES game. Yeah. This was 1990, you know, that's 30 years ago that they had this. And so it's pretty crazy. So thankfully though, Yuji Horii, he did kind of get some extra inspiration here, and Dragon Quest IV, instead of, you know, in the previous entries, you go around and you collect like orbs which is a thing that gets repeated in other Dragon Quest games, including 11 most recently. And then you can, or you might find like emblems or crests, you know, that you have to collect. And then in Dragon Quest IV, you collect characters. You have to go around and find all your buddies that you met in the previous chapters.
I think one of the reasons that it hits me as the my least favorite of them is that is one of my least favorite tropes in JRPGs. It's seeing the characters and then having to go basically recollect them. That's why I don't like the second half of Final Fantasy VI as much, is because you have to recollect characters.
Yeah, and but we should also mention, it's a trope now. But
oh,
back
yeah.
then, I mean, Dragon Quest IV might have been the first game to do this.
Oh, yeah, and having them all be individual characters on the NES rather than kind of generated characters from DQ3 was a huge jump.
Yeah, you have the, they have names, they have personalities, they all have backstories. I mean, there's this huge emphasis on the characters, which is probably why people love these characters so much now. It also, the game changes a lot from the previous entries and the later entries too, in that it's a storybook format. You know, it goes, there's chapters, there's five chapters. It's very storybook, which I think works really well because DQ already has that kind of fairy tale like essence about it. So to me, storybook, fairy tale, mash them together, it all makes sense.
And I think that the whole aesthetic of the games, the bright colors, the, all of that work really well, because this is where you see a lot of the personalities start coming out in Dragon Quest. That it's 1 through 3, you can tell they're still, you know, iterating on being the first games in this genre. And this one, after he finished those, is really coming into its own. And with these being full characters, there are even more characters than, you know, the Prince of Kanak in 2 and things like that. Like, you feel for these characters rather than just let him stay dead.
Yeah.
Except for Kirill.
Rather than just dragging the coffin behind you and having to fly away and find an Yggdrasil leaf because the Prince of Kanak is feeling the vapors.
Yep, exactly.
He's got a bad case of ennui, so now we got to go find an Yggdrasil leaf, or else he won't leave his bed. Oh my gosh! Still such an annoying part, but you know, it does make the Prince of Kanak very memorable to a lot of people.
It's true, and I know that you warned me about Kirill in this one only casting Thwack. That there was a running joke that he would cast Thwack and Whack on characters once he learned those. And as soon as he learned it, the next battle, he cast 3 times. Instead of healing anybody or doing any of the damage spells he had, it was all Thwack all the time.
Yeah. And
dude,
I did not realize that was a thing. Like, I knew it seemed to be a joke in Heroes 2. But when I was playing 4 on the DS, I controlled their actions for the most part. So it never was really a problem. And then, you know, I mean, but yeah, it is a running joke. And that's why I warned you about it, because I was just like, hey, you know, if you're playing with the tactics on, then Kirill's gonna thwack left and right.
Yeah, he needs to focus on healing. Like, it's focused on healing, because anything else, he just considers Thwack being the most useful in any situation.
Yep.
And it's like, and you would think they would fix that. And I think they may have left that in as a joke. Like, that's the kind of AI that you can fix in a remake, but they didn't. And I think that's a joke from them being like, hey, this is Kirill. This is who he is.
Yeah. Well, they did change the tactics. The whole tactic system was changed for the remake, and so I think that's what they did, maybe in lieu of completely reconfiguring his AI.
Yeah.
Because the tactics have completely been redone and changed from the initial iteration of tactics on the NES. So let's really quickly do that segment that we like to call Shameless Self-Promotion.
Shameless.
So we do have a Patreon page. We thanked some new patrons at the beginning of this episode. You can check that out at patreon.com/DragonQuestFM. And really quickly, I just wanted to remind everybody that we have a special offer going right now. If you become a patron for the month of June, by June 28th, then you also get your name in addition to the other fun stuff like stickers and things. You also have a chance to get your name on a special Patreon thank you page in my book, just for supporting my Dragon Quest book a little early. It's called The Dragon Quest Book. It's going to be out really, really soon, putting some finishing touches on some of the stuff, be out very end of June, early July. And so make sure if you want your name in that book on the special thank you section, you just need to head over to our Patreon page by June 28th, which when this episode goes live, I think gives you a couple of days wiggle room to do that if you want to.
Yep. So it'll be really awesome. You want your name in this history making Dragon Quest book.
I wouldn't. That's too much build up, man. Don't say it's history making Dragon Quest book. You're going to give me like a panic attack. Don't build it up too much. And just community spotlight. I know we talked about it already, but remember to check out Slime Time podcast. If you've never listened to them before, listen to them. I'm on there in the newest episode, but they have like 20 some odd episodes now. So check it out. There's some really interesting stuff that they've done. They've done some really cool interviews with various people across the fandom and just people who've done, who maybe aren't Dragon Quest fans, but who have done cool things like fan translating Slime Mori Mori 3, for instance.
Yep.
So check that out. Let's just hop right back into Dragon Quest 4. So we've talked a little bit about the history in terms of, you know, what was going on behind the scenes here and stuff. To talk about that more, I guess for this like latter half of the show, is looking at the history, but also kind of like the lasting legacy of DQ4, because it did have this impact on a lot of the future games. Yeah. Dragon Quest 4 was the first DQ game to have spinoffs, and it got a ton of spinoffs.
Like a lot. a lot that I didn't realize how many it had gotten until like you and I were talking about. I mean, it may have been last year, like even like not even the spinoffs just for video games, but for the manga and everything. Like there's so much stuff for 4 that it really amazes me that it's that popular. But I understand why.
I mean, Tornico was a game for the Super Famicom. And it was the first Mystery Dungeon game. It was, you know, Tornico's Mystery Dungeon. And it launched that entire Mystery Dungeon series.
Yep.
Chunsoft, you know, made that. Okay. So Koichi Nakamura, you know, he went off and founded Chunsoft. Now it's called Spike Chunsoft, after leaving Enix. But, you know, he was the director of the first Dragon Quest game, the second Dragon Quest game, the third Dragon Quest game, and the director of Dragon Quest IV.
Oh, so it makes sense that Tornico would be the first spinoff.
Yeah, I mean, he served as the director for the first 4 games. He was even the programmer for the first 2 games because, you know, they were much smaller back then when they were making the Dragon Quest games. There wasn't a bigger staff. And so Koichi Nakamura, he programmed these games. So, you know, he left the company, he left Enix and everything after that to quit making Dragon Quest games, but Chunsoft went on to make Tornico's Mystery Dungeon, and now, you know, Spike Chunsoft is a very successful company. They have Mystery Dungeon games, Pokemon Mystery Dungeon games, I mean, they're all over the place. And so Tornico was that first ever DQ spinoff, and not only was it the first DQ spinoff, but it did also, you know, launch this popular series, and honestly, it probably helped Chunsoft like make a name for itself.
Yeah, for real. And while I'm not a big fan of Mystery Dungeon type games, I cannot wait to play Tornico whenever you get back up here for the holidays, or we're able to whatever it is that you get back up here for in happier times, to be able to play that one, because I think I'll enjoy the Mystery Dungeon series a lot more when it's not just me repeating the same kind of thing over and over again, when we can pass the controller back and forth.
Yeah, and you have the Super Famicom one on your BitBoy.
Yes.
The one I have is Tornico The Last Hope, which is the only one that's made it over to English. It's the second one, and it made it onto the PS1. And that's the one I have that you're talking about us playing together. There's also a PS2 Tornico game that was all in Japanese. And then he also makes an appearance in the Young Yangus Mystery Dungeon game that came out after DQ8. Tornico's in that one. Tornico's in Heroes 2. He was in the DQ Ballet. I watched it. And so Tornico's in that. I mean, he's all over the place. Tornico's always making cameos in Dragon Quest games. I pretty confidently feel like Tornico is the most famous Dragon Quest character.
I don't know. Like, I honestly have no clue because of, like, I didn't know about Tornico at all until, like, having never even seen him until I played Dragon Quest Heroes 2. And, like, he worked his way into my heart in there. And, but I don't know if I've ever really seen Tornico before that. But I'd seen the heroes. I'd seen all of the hero art before just generally being around. So, for me, it still feels like, you know, Dragon Quest 1 hero maybe. More famous to me. Like, I don't know.
Oh, really? See, I feel like Tornico is everywhere. I feel like he's like just, he's made so many appearances in DQ media and I knew his character. Like, I mean, I had seen him around and stuff even before I knew which Dragon Quest game he was from. Like, I knew that there was this merchant that people loved. I don't know. I just, in terms of if you're gauging popularity by appearances, I think Tornico is definitely the famous, the most famous. I would say Tornico has appeared in more DQ media than any other character.
Maybe so.
And talking about, you know, lots of media, he also, Elena and Kirill, we mentioned this on their episode on Fortune Street. They also make their way into a whole lot of spinoffs.
They do a lot,
like especially later spinoffs. Like, it took them a while to appear in spinoffs, and then once they got into spinoffs, it's like they just decided, like, hey, we're in every spinoff now. You know, there's the Itadaki Streets, Fortune Street on Wii, made it over here. The Heroes games, and also a lot of these characters make cameo appearances in things like Dragon Quest IX, Dragon Quest VI. Dragon Quest VIII. I mean, Dragon Quest IV, it just has such memorable characters. I feel like that's why you always see them in other Dragon Quest games. Even if it's just a cameo where it's like their worlds got linked briefly just for you to talk to them for a minute. It's like you definitely see them in other things. You know, Elena even got a manga series in the 90s, Dragon Quest Princess Elena, which I tried my best to track down, dude, like so hard.
Are they not on Amazon Japan?
Oh, yeah. I just mean, like, I don't have them in my hands.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
Right now. Because I did, like, ask people online, like, hey, any of my DQ friends, like, have this or have access to it or whatever. Lucha helped me find it on Amazon Japan. A couple of other people said they had it, but not digitally or any way that they could get it to me to just read it really quickly, like, over the weekend or anything like I was wanting to do. Somebody did offer to send me some scans, and then I hadn't heard back from them as of right now recording this, so I'm not sure if that fell through or what. But somebody did send me a DM and offer to send me some scans. But
and those are all in Japanese, right? The scans and everything, they're not fan translations.
Right. Yeah, it's all in Japanese. It follows Chapter 2, obviously, the Elena chapter of Dragon Quest IV. But there's... From my understanding, there's like new characters and new locations and things like that. So it kind of like fattens up chapter 2, I guess. Mm-hmm.
That is the best of the chapters, I think. Like, in terms of story, it's the longest. You get a lot more into it. I think I like Tornico's chapter the best, personally. I thought it was more fun. But I think that the Elena chapter is probably the one that, yeah, you would want to definitely adapt into a manga that I would like to see it. I think that y'all should get on fan translating it because I want to read it and I'm that selfish. So please take on a major side project for me.
Now, when you say chapters, do you mean including chapter 5?
Oh, like, no. Chapter 5. No, of the individual character chapters.
The first four chapters. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. That's what I thought you meant, but I wasn't sure. We also mentioned, you know, the hero is also famous. He's a playable character in Smash Brothers Ultimate. We mentioned that at the beginning of this episode. The male version is a playable character in Smash Brothers Ultimate. And then Ragnar, he's made some cameos too. You know, he made a cameo in DQ8.
Mm-hmm.
Tornico and Healy did as well, but he's in the Monster Arena part of that game. And we talked about this when we did our Rocket Slime episode, is that Big Daddy is basically just a slime version of Ragnar.
He is. Like, there's, like, the more that, you know, I know we were talking about it, and we were a little more hesitant to say it then, but now it's like, you look at it, it's like, oh yeah, that's totally Ragnar. It's like, that's,
yeah, as, I mean, he's got the mustache. The
mustache. Yeah, it's all there. So I like Big Daddy.
Yeah.
So speaking of Big Daddy, So my friend growing up had his stepdad was really big into cow shows and horse shows, and like he owned farms, and for some reason Big Daddy was his favorite movie. And so he kept a copy of Big Daddy in every single room where he had a TV so he could watch it at any given time. And I thought you should know that while we're talking about Big Daddy, that someone I know loved it enough to buy multiple copies on DVD so that they didn't have to get up and transfer it to different rooms of the house to watch it that often.
That is very interesting. I don't know how to react to that.
I don't think there's a right way to react to it. But when you said that we love Big Daddy, it reminded me of Herbie loving Big Daddy. So,
yeah. Huh. All right. Well, I do quote that movie quite often when Rob Schneider is trying to pronounce hippopotamus in that movie. And he's like, hip hop anonymous. But then he's like, dang, you give him all the easy ones. I say that all the time. Dang, you give him all the easy ones.
I forgot that was where Hip Hop Anonymous came from.
Yeah, like when somebody, like, I don't know, it comes up more in conversation than you think it would.
That,
and I like to say that. Yeah, dang, you give him all the easy ones. Anyway, so yeah, Big Daddy, Adam Sandler. There we go. Mina and Maya also appear in a lot of spinoffs. If you listen to our Legend of the Hero Abel episodes, if we were watching all through that anime, they show up in that one. Some Dragon Quest IV characters show up in the anime, and Mina and Maya show up there. That's probably their earliest appearance that I'm aware of in DQ media outside of 4. And then, you know, they've since been in... Maya is in both Heroes 1 and 2, and Mina is in Heroes 2. Even Ragnar made it into Heroes 2 in the Japanese version. So Heroes 2 is just like a big Dragon Quest IV reunion, except for poor little Boria, who's never making it into anything ever.
And I liked Boria, and you made fun of me because I had him in my party at some point, and you're like, dude, stop using Boria.
Boria is so lame. He's like the lamest character. He has the least amount of personality, and honestly, like, I never felt the need to really use him in my party after Chapter 2.
Hmm. See, I liked him. I like magic users, and I also liked putting the crotchety old man in slot 1. So I was just walking around as Boria in the world.
Which also, that kind of is actually a perfect segue to our next and final topic here, which is, you know, all the firsts that Dragon Quest IV offered. Is this is the first one in the series to have a wagon.
Mm-hmm. Which I actually didn't know was in this one. So whenever I got the wagon, I really liked wandering around the world with a wagon like that.
Yeah, you get him from Mr. Hank Hoffman Jr. at the Last Chance Saloon.
Yep.
He even joins your party for a little bit. Hank Hoffman Jr. does.
He does.
And so you get the wagon, and just kind of going with what you were talking about Boria there, is that you... you can put the hero in the wagon if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you do that? Are you insane? But you can do it. And so I assume that's what you did to make Boria be your lead character? Or
no,
did you just move the hero
to a different slot? Yeah, you can just put him in a different slot. Like, I didn't actually... I put the hero in the wagon one time by accident, and I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa there. Let's not be too hasty. And went back in and grabbed her out. But it was... I definitely had Boria like lead my party around for a while. And then I figured out that you got hit, the person on the left in the first slot got hit harder and more often than others, kind of protecting them. And I was like, yeah, that's why Boria is dying so often. And I moved him back. It wasn't worth it.
Yeah, dude, that's how it is in every Dragon Quest game.
I just learned that now. Like, it
oh
took
my
me
gosh.
This many. Shut up.
You played like five of them. You've beaten like five of them.
I know.
Man, you made it really hard on yourself then, I guess.
Usually with
that
hero in that slot. So
yeah, so you don't notice it.
Yeah, I never really noticed it, but when I moved Boria there, I'm like, daggum, he takes a lot of damage. And then I figured it out. Like, I don't remember, I was reading the strategy guide or something, and it was like, yeah, you want to do this? And I'm like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. that's a fantastic idea.
So, this was also the first DQ game to have tactics. We mentioned tactics briefly earlier, right. And I said they weren't as nice as they are now. And it's basically, I wanted to expand on that a little bit in today's episode. And that's just because follow orders didn't exist in the original iteration of the game.
Okay.
So you basically controlled the hero, and then you could set your tactics, and the tactics were very bare bones. You know, you could tell them to like conserve MP, like don't use magic. You could tell them focus on healing, and you could tell them to go all out. I think go all out, right, is the term.
Whenever
they just kill things all willy-nilly.
Show no mercy.
Show no mercy. Thank you. And so it wasn't nearly as good as it was in the remakes.
I didn't know that. I thought they were just the CPU-controlled AI like normal, like in 3, where you just had a party that did their own thing. And
yeah, and I was just going to say, that's where the Kirill Thwack thing really comes in, is because, you know, if you can't make Kirill follow orders, then, you know, he might just thwack every boss you bump into.
He does. He sure does. He is a special kind of character. And I like Kirill. Like, Kirill was always in my party. Like, I really liked that character. I like the priest outfit. I really like that you get to wear Kirill's outfit as a priest in DQ7 whenever you change into that vocation. Like, I just liked him. But yeah, the thwacking needed to be toned down some.
The thwacking. That sounds like a book Stephen King is going to write like in a couple of years.
It's true. Dragon Quest IV, The Thwacking.
As a side note, Grace and I watched Dr. Sleep the other day, and it was pretty faithful to the books and pretty good for 2/3 of the movie. And then the last third of the movie is complete garbage. So there's my 2 cents on Dr. Sleep.
Fair enough. That's a side there.
But anyway, so mini medals were also first introduced in Dragon Quest IV.
Right.
It's in the remakes of 3. But mini medals, that's where you... I think they were even called small medals in Dragon Warrior 4.
Maybe so.
Which isn't quite as catchy as mini medals. But yeah, they were first introduced in 4. So 4 had what I know is your favorite mini game in Dragon Quest games and maybe any video game ever. I know how much you love mini medals.
Yeah. Like, I actually like mini medals. Like, these were... I tend not to go out of my way for them, but I like collecting mini medals.
Yeah, so you have Dragon Quest IV to thank for that.
Yeah, so like I do get excited whenever I'm going through. I would rather get a mini medal out of a random jar or chest or something than I would a magic item. Like, I'm like, yeah, it's a mini medal. I can get something later. And yeah. I don't know why. It's that dopamine hit, like a gacha game.
Yeah. My wife yells at me because when we're in public, I just walk around smashing pots that I find outside of storefronts. And she's like, Austin, stop. And I'm like, why if it's a mini medal?
I know. It's like me. It's like I'm always looking for rupees. It's like I'm tearing down people's bushes. And Jennifer's like, why are you doing that? I'm like, I got to find my rupees.
I go into my neighbor's house. I pull out drawers and I find like boxer shorts and a mini medal. And my neighbor is like, get out of here.
I'm stealing my jewelry and underpants.
None of that is true, it would be hilarious. It would be hilarious and also frightening if it were true. The other thing that they changed up with DQ4 is that you could save your game in a church.
Yeah.
You don't have to track down a king anymore.
And in the remakes of 1 through 3, did they fix that? Because I know that in DQ1, the remake, you still go to the king. But I haven't played the remakes of 2 and 3 far enough to really check and see if there are kings in those, or if you actually they put in the quality of life of having churches.
The remakes that I have played, you still talk to the king.
Okay.
Even the Switch remake of, I haven't played the Switch remake of 2 yet. I have it, but I haven't played it. But in 1 and 3 Switch remakes, you still talk to the king.
Okay, because that's what I was, when I was playing 3, that's what I found. And then I was like, maybe, you know, I just haven't found the right church. So, good to know.
So, yeah. So, the, like, original Dragon Quest IV really did add a lot of firsts just to the series. And it's things that got carried on for pretty much every Dragon Quest game that followed after it. And kind of just want to end here with saying that you and I, in the upcoming weeks, when we're going to do one focused on all of our heroes and characters next week, but we are mostly going to be referring to the DS remake.
Right.
Because that's the one that you and I both played and beat as the DS remake.
Right.
So there are some changes in the DS remake from other versions, like the mobile port of it, the, you know, PS1 Japanese remake, the NES version. There's right. going to be differences. You and I are talking about the DS one.
And I'm disappointed in the DS one that it doesn't have party chat. And I didn't realize how much I didn't care about party chat. Let me put it that way. Like, I'm playing, I didn't think I was going to miss it until I got to chapter 5 of this game. And like, there was no real interaction between the characters. There was no, sometimes there was no real breadcrumbing along on what I was supposed to do next. That's the kind of thing that you sometimes get from party chat. And I don't know why it's in the mobile version, but not the DS version, because I've even seen people talk about when you data mine it, that most of the lines are there, that they just don't have it in there. And I didn't know how much I missed it until I started playing DQ7 again. And it's like, you just hit B and you start party chatting. And I'm like, man, I do. It's like, I like them. I like being able to hear what Ruff says. And I like being able to talk to Maribel. And it makes me happy. So when I'm looking back at 4, it's like, man, I really did miss that party chat a lot.
Yeah. You don't know what you got till it's gone.
Was it in the NES version?
Yeah, as far as I know, the only version that's missing party chat is the English DS remake.
Weird. Totally weird.
And I read at some point, I don't know if there's like a definitive answer, but I heard that it was due to cost and time constraints. Honestly, I'm just glad that we got a DS version of 4 in English to begin with.
You know, right.
I mean, I'm just as disappointed as everyone else that party chat's not in there. And it's the one negative thing I really have to say about the DS remake is that party chat is gone. So I'm just glad we got it at all. But I think, you know, it was Dragon Quest IV. It wasn't necessarily a huge like bestseller in the States when it came out on the NES.
What, a Dragon Warrior game? That surprises me.
And so, you know, just the fact that they were at least willing to send it over here to us in English, like, I mean, I guess I'll take what I can get at that point. It is added into the mobile version, so I mean, that's good. But yeah, I think from everything I've read, and I think it's mostly just fan speculation, is that it was never finished because of time and cost.
I gotcha. That makes sense, especially with it being one of the probably lesser priorities for Square Enix at the time. And do you have any plans to go back to the mobile version of this? Because I know you played 1-3, and with it having something extra in the mobile version, do you plan on playing it at any point just to experience all the party chat whenever you replay 4 again?
I do not, because I don't like mobile games very much. I came really close to replaying 4 again while you were replaying it, while you were finishing it up at least. But I'm holding out hope that the whole Zenithian trilogy makes its way on to the Switch soon, since we got the Erdrick trilogy last year. I'm hoping sometime before the year is up, we get 4, 5, and 6.
Or at least an announcement of them. I'll take them next year because I'm playing through them right now on the DS. I just bought 5. I'll probably join it like when I take a break from 7 because it's absurdly long. But next year would be good for a replay.
Yeah, and I'm really excited because the Zenithian trilogy is my favorite set of Dragon Quest games outside of 11. I mean, it goes 11, 4, 5, 6 in that order.
I mean,
it's like, those are my favorite ones. So you know, they're games I definitely will replay. I've been delaying it because I keep thinking that we'll see an announcement for the Zenithian trilogy on Switch soon. And I really hope that's the case.
Yeah, it would be absolutely wonderful if we did. Like, I would love to see them with just higher res textures. Like, I love the sprites. Like, I absolutely adore the sprites that are in these games because they all use the same engine, it looks like, for 4, 5, and 6. And so I really love the sprites in DQ4. And I don't want to see those changed other than just high res. Like, although I'm also one of the few people who really like the upgraded sprites in DQ 5 and 6, or Final Fantasy 5 and 6 for the mobile and Steam versions. So I know people, I would be fine if they gave them the upgrade for that. But yeah, I know people, other people really despise them.
I gotcha.
But yeah.
So that about does it for our episode 1 deep dive into Dragon Quest IV. Next week, we're going to be talking about the heroes, the characters, the chosen, if you will. So next week's episode is going to be all about that stuff. So make sure you join in next week to hear us talk even more about Dragon Quest IV. Remember, if you want to talk to us on Twitter, we are at Dragon Quest FM. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/DragonQuestFM. You can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/DragonQuestFM. If you want to talk to me directly, you can do that on Twitter at Dragon Quaston. And you can check out my regular Dragon Quest blog, which is at DragonQuestAustin.com.
And you can talk to me directly on Twitter at Professor Beej. You can listen to my other podcast, the Geek to Geek podcast, at GeekToGeekCast.net. Nope. You can listen to my other podcast, the Geek to Geek podcast, at GeekToGeekCast.com. And also, if you would like any other awesome, awesome, awesome geeky topics, we have geektogeekmedia.com, where we have Slack and Discord, video game reviews, blogs, and streams, and just all sorts of stuff that you guys would probably enjoy a great deal. So check it out.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye, y'all.